This episode of The Girlfriend Bracket is brought to you by Gathering Magic and CoolStuffInc.com. With free shipping on orders of $100 or more, a 25% buy list bonus, and their ever-popular customer rewards program, CoolStuffInc is the store for all of your Magic the Gathering needs.
They call me Hal. They call me Stacey. They call me Her. They call me Jane.
Hey everybody, this is episode number 44 of The Girlfriend Bracket. My name is Erin.
I'm Hallie.
I'm Katie.
And I'm Chris.
We're actually, for those who are listening, we actually changed our recording time. So we are now recording on a Monday. So it's a little strange. Like, I really feel like I haven't even started my week yet. And now I'm having to talk about it. Yes. Like, I'm still recovering from the weekend. And it's like, you know, typically we talk about our experiences and it's like, I haven't even done anything this week. So it's a little strange, but I think we can plow through it.
I had kind of a crazy day today. So it kind of makes up for the lack of there being, you know, 3 days of lead up to the show.
I did absolutely nothing today. And it's really difficult to come up with the motivation to do your job when you know that you're not going to have one in 3 months. Like, a lot of our supervisors have taken other positions. So my boss is not even going to be my boss as of February 1st. Like, he took a position somewhere else. And when I asked him who was going to take over for him, he's like, beats me. So I effectively don't even have a manager at this point. So I did Sudoku puzzles all day and listened to podcasts.
That sounds like a nice Monday.
Yeah.
I mean, the day, it just kind of crawled by, though. So it was like, I really wish that I had the motivation. But, you know, it just feels, there's this feeling of, what does it matter? Like, I'm not going to be here in 3 months. And, you know, they keep trying to go through the motions where they're like, oh, you got to keep productivity up. And it's like, who fucking cares? And that was just my attitude. And I think that's going to be my attitude going forward. It's just, who cares?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
New Patreon subscriber, saying a big hello to Jesse. Thank you so much for supporting the show. Woman of Excellence this week is a young lady named Emma Handy. Emma is a Magic player from Asheville, North Carolina, who recently came in 9th place at SCG Atlanta.
Woo!
Yay!
On Breakers. Like, ugh. She thought she had it. She's like, I'm in, you guys. I'm in. And then, bam.
Bummer.
It was heartbreaking. Emma has recently dedicated her time to becoming a full-time grinder on the SCG Tour. She writes about Magic over at cardconfidants.com and has even participated in discussions surrounding the use of gender-neutral pronouns and issues that transgender players face. Fun fact, she will also be staying at my place for SCG Milwaukee in April, so you can definitely say hello to her then. Or if you can't wait and you want to find out more about Emma, you can find her on Twitter at EM_TEEGE. We also have one more shout out here. I just want to make sure I'm pronouncing this correctly. It's Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday to you. We're so bad at this. Happy birthday, dear Chris. Happy birthday to you.
Thank you.
Yeah, happy birthday, sweetheart.
Are your ears bleeding?
No, but I do have one more foot in the grave now. I'm the big 3-3.
Oh, yep. Man.
I know.
And you were nice enough to even push back your birthday dinner to record this.
Yep.
Man, talk about dedication.
I'm dedicated.
On with the show. SCG Atlanta was this past weekend, and it was the first week of New Standard after Oath of the Gatewatch came out. What was your impression of the decks that did well?
Rally was everywhere, so I guess that's going to be the thing now. It's not my jam, so I'll kind of stay away from it. I'm trying to actually think about what I want to do sideboard-wise for decks I'm building to deal with it. I thought it was interesting that a lot of people were doing, like, this Mardu green thing, and I was like, okay, well, what's all that about? But I guess if it works, I guess I'm just a weird person that I don't want to just jam. I just don't want to jam cards or colors in just because they're good. I can understand why people want to do it, but to me, it's just like Mardu green, Abzan blue. it just doesn't do anything for me. It doesn't trip my trigger. And I guess I just think that for some of those decks, it seems like you're trying to make it better, but it almost seems like you almost make it worse because you're trying to force things in there that maybe don't necessarily have a spot. I really was impressed with the blue-red prowess deck, but I would probably make it a little different than some of the builds I've seen. I don't know what I would do differently, but just like looking through some of the deck lists, I'm like, well, I don't know if I'd run that. Maybe I do this instead. I'm not saying it'd be any better, but just to have my own little thing on it. And it seemed like Reflector Mage like did some serious work on Kalidus.
Yes, my boy!
I know, every time I see Reflector Mage, I'm like, Hallie, she called it Reflector Mage.
Well, I knew it was going to be good and limited. I didn't know about for Constructed, but I am so happy to see Reflector Mage having his day in the sun. And he makes me really want to play Rally. I mean, Rally is a good deck, and I do like to play good decks, but the fact that I can play a deck where I can Collected Company into Reflector Mage just makes me even happier. So, you know, that's a deck that I'm looking at. I also thought the Blue-Red Prowess deck was pretty sweet. As soon as I heard Ross Merriam was playing it on Saturday, I got really excited and was scouring the internet trying to find his deck list. But, yeah, I thought, you know, there were a lot of cards that definitely made a splash in the format. I saw Jerry Thompson playing Kalidus in his Jeskai Black deck. The mono-green Eldrazi decks now have, you know, what is it? They have Thought Not Seer. I saw people playing Worldbreaker. I saw people playing Kozilek's Return. So a lot of different cards making a splash in the format. But, you know, funny to see that even though people are trying different things and, you know, different cards are, you know, sort of taking the format by storm, you still have a Tarka Red just winning the day. And maybe part of that is Reckless Bushwhacker, like, enabling them to go wide. But, you know, it's the first week of the format and red decks are just going to red deck.
Yeah, red decks typically do well during release weekend. It's interesting, though, the deck that won, because Atarka Red won the whole thing, completely scrapped the Battle Rage Become Amends combo. Like you said, Hallie, he went wide. He did not have that at all. In fact, he even splashed black for Painful Truce in the sideboard and Self-Inflicted Wound.
Mm-hmm. It's funny. So I playtest with a red mage all the time, and he's actually been talking about splashing for Self-Inflicted Wound just because he has so much trouble dealing with rhinos. And, well, not necessarily just rhinos, but I guess, like, the Warden into Anafenza into Rhino curve was always really difficult for him playing the deck. So he was like, oh, what if I splash black for Self-Inflicted Wound? And I talked him out of it, and now I feel kind of bad about it. but, yeah, I thought this deck was really sweet. I definitely think, you know, the combo can be a little fragile depending on, you know, how much removal is kind of going around in the format and, you know, how, you know, what the format is like. So I think going wide is good now. I mean, I played this limited format all weekend and going wide seemed to be good there. And I guess I'm not surprised that, you know, a strategy that's good and limited is translating to a constructed format also.
Mm-hmm. The 24th place Atarka Red deck did keep it. It kept the combo, but it also splashed black for Kolaghan.
Mm.
So it does seem like there's this subtle shift towards like a Jund, you know, aggro list. Yeah, the blue-red prowess deck is nice. It does seem like it's being tooted as the next big thing. It seems like a variation of a Tarka Red. Like, it seems very tempo. You know, you're using prowess and unblockable. You know, again, not really focusing on being explosive, just more like consistent damage kind of pecking away at you. Yeah. So you're talking about the Rally deck. It does seem like Rally is the best deck in the format right now.
Mm-hmm.
And it does seem like if you want to set foot in a standard event, you need to make sure that your Rally matchup is good. And I remember going into Oakland, I didn't face Rally that much. And so I went into Oakland with very little experience against it. And now it's like, I would not do that. Like if there was a GP in 2 weeks, I would make sure that I had a good Rally matchup because you just can't afford to really sleep on that deck. Yeah. Also, Ailey was seeing play in the Rally deck. I think Sam Black had her in his version at the Super Sunday series. And I was really surprised about that. Abzan was also splashing blue for Reflector Mage. So you don't necessarily have to play Rally.
Hmm. Okay. That's interesting.
You can have it all.
Yeah, I did think the Abzan Company deck was pretty cool because when you can Coco into Matter Reshaper, that's pretty cool.
Yeah, I was surprised to see that deck in the ramp list. Ali Antrazi was running a set of those, and I was like, huh? I was like, I was actually a little disappointed with some of the ramp decks. Like, I felt like they had a common theme of, like, everything but the kitchen sink. And maybe that was, like, card availability, but it was like, you know, there were some decks that had, like, one Worldbreaker, and there were some decks that had four Matter Reshapers, and then two Ulamog, and no Kozilek, and one Ugin, and they were all just really random. And I was really surprised by that, and I was also surprised by how many of the builds didn't seem to change much. Like, there were people that were saying, myself included, that ramp was going to be really good after Oath, and a lot, there weren't that many Oath cards in the list, where I was like, you could have played this before. Like, why are you playing this now? Like, I didn't really understand what brought these people out there. I was also really surprised that a lot of the ramp decks were not playing Ruin in their wake. That was something that I just assumed was going to be a given, because, you know, why wait until turn three to ramp when you can start on turn two? But there was a lot of talk about how much of an investment you had to make to get Ruin in their wake to work. Like, if you were having to run Evolving Wilds, and how many wastes, and if you had to run Oath of Nyssa, and if you had to, you know, whether or not it was worth it. And I'm anxious to see some more work in that regard, because I just assumed it was going to be good.
Yeah, I mean, I haven't played ramp myself, so I can't necessarily speak to that. But just looking at these lists, it seems like the fact that they can, the decks can play Spatial Contortion as a removal spell means that they have a bit more time against the aggro decks, because, I mean, just from playing against ramp as an Abzan aggro player, like, my game plan was always to just, like, get in as much damage as quickly as possible. Like, get you to three, and then doesn't matter if you cast an Ulamog, I just cast a Rhino and win, like, that kind of thing. And I think now that they have access to Spatial Contortion and, you know, possibly Kozilek's Return also, just having more removal might mean that they can sort of take their time finding their combo. They can take their time assembling all those, you know, land pieces in order to get to those big sort of game-ending creatures.
Yeah, I also think that, you know, there are some decisions to be made in terms of what you want your threats to be, because Ugin seems like he's in a really precarious place right now. You know, you have these colorless decks that are kind of on the come up, where Ugin is kind of bad against, and so you don't necessarily want to jam for Ugin. Also, too, do you want, you know, three Ulamog to one Kozilek? Do you want to make room for Kozilek's Return, which means you don't want to be using Mana Dorks? Do you want to be making room for Wastes and Ruin in their wake at the expense of Sanctum of Ugin and Shrine of the Fallen Gods? You know, there's a lot of decisions to make there, and I'm interested to see, like, what the best build seems to be, because it seems like they're trying to have it all, and I'm not sure that's possible.
Right, and I think this is, once again, a very standard place for the format to be first week in. There isn't a lot of consensus. There are definitely some strong decks emerging, but there isn't a lot of consensus about what the right pieces are, what the optimal build is, and I'm sure that'll shake out as the SCG Opens keep happening these next couple weeks.
Katie, what did you think about the first week of New Standard? Was there anything that impressed you?
I like the blue-red prowess deck. I kind of think, like Chris, like, it could evolve farther, and I expect it to, but I think it's a really good budget deck besides Jace. So I'm hoping that I can just borrow some Jaces and play it at FNM and see what it's all about, because I really like tempo decks, and I'm kind of ready to just play something different for a while, so I think I'm going to experiment with this and see how it goes.
It kind of reminds me of how Jeskai used to be when Cons first came out. You know, like, you know, you were using Mantis Rider, you were using really cheap spells, and then Stoke the Flames, and that's the feel that I got when I look at this list.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it's like a red deck, but it has blue, so it's better. So I'm really excited to play it.
Blue makes everything better. Just ask the Abzan players. They're all running blue now.
Oh, yeah.
I'll never forget that night I was playing against Hallie, and she goes to look for a Sunken Hollow, and I was like, oh, are you splashing blue there? And she's like, no, I just can. And yeah. I was like, oh, okay. So
my Flooded Strands get all three colors.
Yay! I was starting, I feel like now is sort of a bad time for Esper Dragons. I do feel like Crackling Doom is everywhere, and Reflector Mage is surprisingly bad for Ojutai. So I think if anybody's going to play Control right now, I think that we should move away from Dragons. I think that we should be moving in more of like a Mage Ring Esper direction, like Reed Duke was playing. And also, I think there's some room for maybe Esper Super Friends. I think possibly by using some of the Oaths, maybe going with like Gideon, Ubnixilis, Sorin, possibly even Narset. I think that might be a way to go.
Hmm.
but I'm just not sure Ojutai is where you want to be. Like, I know Brad Nelson was playing Esper Dragons this weekend, and I was very excited about that, but just seeing a Reflector Mage bounce an Ojutai just made my heart hurt a little bit, where... Like, you know, I was looking at the rally matchup, and I was like, oh, they don't have any real ways to deal with Ojutai. And I'm like, oh, ooh, like it's just a really hostile environment, I think. Were you surprised to see Goblin Dark Dwellers doing so well? It was in Dark Jeskai and some of the Mardu lists as well.
A lot of people just have been talking smack about it, like, because it was like the Buy a Box promo, and people are like, oh, it's going to be a tarot card. Da, 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 da. And then, like, I'm like, well, all these people are playing it, so looks pretty baller, so I don't know. Just because it doesn't have haste, oh knows. There's cards that give you haste. I mean, shit, what's that one card? The one that...
Expedite?
Expedite. Be like, sweet, I have an Expedite dirt right in your face. Like, whatever.
Menace is nothing to sneeze at, though. I recall, I think... I was watching a feature match and somebody was using it, and that Menace was really relevant, actually. And I think that's a part of the card that people tend to ignore. Like, I know the second part, the recursion part, got a lot of love, but people didn't really give a 4/4 with Menace is nothing to cry about. It's funny because you were talking about, you know, your experience, Chris, where the people around you weren't really hyped about it. Everybody around me was stoked. Like, my friend Ryan Hip was DMing me for days, like, this card is everything, this card's gonna break the format. And he sent me a deck list before going to SCG Atlanta, and people love to send me deck lists and then make me swear to never talk about them. Like, seriously, my DM box is full of, like, I've got a couple GP decks, I have a couple Pro Tour decks, I have a couple, like, PPTQ decks, and they're all like, you know, this deck is awesome, but you can't tell anybody. And I'm like, okay. And so he was hyping up Goblin Dark Dwellers for weeks, and then, you know, he actually didn't do well at the Open, unfortunately, but everybody around me was stoked for it and couldn't wait to play with it. Also, there was the first weekend of New Modern with the bans officially in place. Teamer Delver won the Classic event in the hands of Todd Anderson. Mm-hmm. That was interesting. It was Delver, Tarmogoyf, two copies of Hooting Mandrills.
Hoot hoot.
One copy of Young Peasy, as the kids call him. Young Pyromancer. A copy of Mutagenic Growth, which I was just kind of hanging out there. Three Spell Pierce, three Vapor Snake, three Gitaxian Probe, Lightning Bolt, Is It Charm, Dismember. There was a lot of talk that with Splinter Twin out of the format that Delver decks could become the next big blue-red deck. Do you guys think that's possible?
It could be. I mean, even just looking at his sideboard, I mean, he's good to go to fuck over Tron and, like, a whole bunch of, like, other decks. Like, that's why I was, like, looking at it earlier. I'm like, how does this fuck up my plan? Because if people start playing it, I need to, like, yeah, be a little bit proactive. But, I mean, it looks like a fun list. It looks like something that people could kind of, you know, use as a go-to, you know, if they were playing Twin, you know, to try to still have some... old funsies with good old Snapcaster Mage and other shit like that. And, you know, people have been wanting, I think, to have Delver be a thing again, and this is definitely, I think, a good way to try and see how it goes.
Yeah, I thought this list was really sweet. I was a little surprised to see Todd playing this, because I know he is a big Infect player, and he, you know, we were talking about how Infect could be good now because there's going to be so much Tron in the format, but I don't know. We'll see, you know, how the format shakes out.
It was interesting to note that there were no copies of Tron in the top 16.
Yes.
And no. Cedric Phillips actually wrote an article. I didn't get to see it because it was behind the premium wall, but basically saying that a lot of the hype behind Tron, you know, because when the Twin ban happened and the Bloom ban happened, the first response was Tron is going to be the next big thing. Tron's going to be the deck to beat. And he is a longtime Tron player, and he basically said, I think you're wrong. Like, I don't think that's going to be the case at all. And it seems like with this top 16, at least, he was right. The majority of the top 16 were all aggressive decks. There were three copies of Merfolk, two copies of Affinity, two copies of Burn, two copies of Zoo, and one copy of Infect.
Yeah.
So it seems like people came out ready to fight Tron.
Yep, absolutely.
It seemed like for a long time in Modern that Lightning Bolt was just bad because Deceiver Exarch is a 4-butt. And it seems like now that, like, Delver is becoming back into being more of a thing, and there's, like, creature-based things, that Lightning Bolt can kind of make its comeback. And that makes me really excited as a control player, because removal spells were really awkward for a long time, where I was like, well, I could play Lightning Bolt, or I could just play, like, Electrolyze and still kill Snapcaster Mages and Lingering Souls and draw a card. Or I could play Lightning Bolt and not kill very many things that I actually want to kill and not draw a card. So I was excited to see the Jeskai Control deck in the top eight doing some work. But I'm kind of excited to play Lightning Bolts again.
That's actually bad news for Infect too, because you know, you brought up a really good point. People weren't playing the Lightning Bolts. I think Jund was, but you know, I'm not really sure. I know Burn always has been, but yeah, I mean, if there's more bolts flying around, that means that Infect isn't as great, and there goes Infect and there goes Tron. Those were the two decks that people thought were going to take over. So I noticed some very subtle differences in the Burn deck specifically. Both Burn decks in the top 16 were running Wild Nacatl. They were also running the full set of Eidolons, and it seems like they cut down on main deck Skullcrack. So I don't know if they were just not anticipating any sort of, like, timely reinforcements or kitchen finks, but I was surprised to see that, because normally they would run with a play set of those, and that stuck out to me. And also, they were never really... I heard a lot of Burn players say that Eidolon was, like, the worst card in their deck, and so they'd run, like, two, and I was also really surprised to see four of those, where it's interesting to see what direction the Burn decks are going.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, if the format is getting more aggressive and more people are playing Lightning Bolts... Seems like Eidolon is a good way to hedge.
Yeah, yeah. I feel like we're seeing just a lot of next leveling, where it's people going, I think this is going to be big, so I'm going to play this. And then, you know, so again, you saw people that were like, well, I'm going to play, we expect Tron to be big, so that means Infect, so I'm going to play to beat Infect. I'm not really worried about Tron. Like, it's interesting seeing how people chose to attack this.
Yeah, it's that whole rock, paper, scissors thing.
Yeah. Like, I went to FNM the other day, and I made changes to my sideboard. I put in three copies of Ethereal Haze, because it's a more affordable version of Darkness, expecting to see Infect, and I didn't face Infect at all. And that was something I was prepared for, and I didn't even have to deal with it. So now I'm kind of wondering if I was too hasty in preparing for Infect. Like, I'm just curious to see where things go. I also noticed that the red decks are packing less copies of Destructive Revelry, which, yay! Because that way I can hide behind Leyline of Sanctity a lot better. Yeah. So you guys just board it out. You don't need it at all. Just go for it. I do have one thing I have to say, though, and this might be hashtag unpopular opinion. I am not impressed with the Mono Black Eldrazi decks.
Oh,
like,
really?
Am I the only one that thinks they're not that great?
I don't know. I haven't played against it yet, so I don't know.
Okay, I faced them twice now, and, like, I'm not really losing to Eldrazi. I'm losing to, like, the 10 discard spells and a turn 2 Stony's Islands. That's what I'm losing to.
Right.
I'm not losing to turn 4 Ulamogs. I'm not losing to Kozilek. I'm not losing to Ugin's. That's what I'm losing to, and it's just, like... I don't buy it. I mean, maybe things will change. Maybe I just need more experience against it. But the couple times I've played it, it just hasn't been... I think the deck would be nothing if it weren't for all the discard spells and everything else. Like, it just... I'm not impressed.
I mean, it could be skewed because you're playing, like, a very linear combo deck. Like, maybe they're just leaning very heavily on that hate because that's how they beat you. I'd be interested to see, I mean, if I start playing in Modern Leagues, if I face it. Like, Chris, what's your experience been like? I know you've been doing Modern Leagues.
I haven't done it lately, but when I first started doing it, it was all I was playing was the Mono Black Eldrazi deck and its variants and stuff. And I was actually talking to a friend of mine the other day that does Green Red and Green Black Tron, and I was like, well, what do you think about this versus your deck? I'm like, I'm not really concerned about them other than their hand disruption. Everything else is kind of like, eh, I can deal with it. Cool, you're going to take my tower, enjoy it, love it, don't care. Like, I'm just like, there's other things that I can do, and unless you have something to get rid of some of my other win cons, like, I'm just not as concerned about you. So maybe it just depends on the deck that's going up against it. I do know that I did some testing within the last 2 weeks with Aaron from Turn 1 Thought Season. He ran a blue-black variant of it that just, like, wrecked my fucking day. Like, it was just, like, it was just, like, awful. It's running delays. I hate delay.
What does that do?
Delay. It's got what,
a counter spell? Well, it's a count. It's a split second counter spell, and then the spell comes back as a suspend.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, kind of like remand counters it, but puts it back in your hand, counters it, and puts time counters on it.
Yeah.
So that it exiles it because of that suspend cards are technically exiled, and then it eats it with the processor.
Yep.
Oh, that's sweet.
That's really cool.
It is. It's just kind of like, dang. And then he texts me later. He's like, the deck's total bullshit, right? And I'm like, it totally is. So, but yeah, it's definitely powerful. So, you know, I would have to, you know, see if other people are running like a variation like he is. But, you know, yeah, the hand disruption definitely is bad news for pretty much anybody. But for me, I'm not as worried about anything and except for those particular cards. So I'm like, okay, we have to counter shit or be willing to lose some important things and try to just make up for it later.
Yeah, I felt like I did a lot better when I was able to land a ley line against them, Leyline of Sanctity, because they couldn't target me with Relic, and not that it really mattered, but just, you know, there were a surprising number of things that they couldn't target me with, and so I felt like I had a better shot against them when that happened. Yeah, also they use Ashiok in the blue-black list to again, feed the exile, which is really gross, and yeah, that's a bad deal.
I feel like it is impressive because they're using so much discard. Like, I know I have a friend who plays a lot of Jund, and whenever we're going through his deck list, he's playing, I don't know, like 6 discard spells, I think, is what they usually run. And I think it's impressive that a deck is just jamming all these discard and being like, no, you don't get to play your cards, I'm going to play my cards, and then I'm going to win. And I kind of like that strategy. I mean, I don't think it's the strategy for me, but I kind of like that there is a deck that's doing that. That's not just like an 8-rack kind of deck.
See, I guess maybe it's just the black mage in me, but like I get kind of annoyed when I see people using discard spells as a sledgehammer, when in my opinion it should be used as a scalpel. Like Reed Duke wrote a really awesome post called Thoughtseize and You, which basically talks about how, so when Thoughtseize was first revealed to be in Standard, he was talking about like the optimal ways to use it. And, you know, you get these people that, like, to me, discard spells are meant to be used for things that I can't otherwise deal with. So if I'm playing mono black, I want to be going after things like enchantments or artifacts that I can't remove. But if it's a creature, I have kill spells for it. If it's a planeswalker, I can probably kill that too. And I don't mind seeing people use discard spells, but when they use them not really knowing what they're taking, where they're like, you know, or just using them on turn one, on turn two, as opposed to going, I have this spell that I'm trying to protect, I'm going to play a duress first, make sure you don't have any counter spells, and sort of clear the way for this card. I feel like people just kind of slam them one after the other, and it's like, do you know you have ways to deal with this card? Why are you jamming all these discard spells when you have a kill spell? And I guess that's just me, but I get very frustrated because I feel like people lean on them really hard. I will say the one mono black Eldrazi player that I played at FNM had main deck Surgical Extraction because of the exile effects. So he had his discard spell and he discarded my Simian Spirit Guide. And I was like, that's cool. I got 3 more. And then he's like, Surgical Extraction. And I was like, I don't have any way to pay for my spell. I'm like, okay, game 2. And that was in game 1, and I was not expecting to see that. So that deck is just full of surprises, but I do feel like the discard spells, you know, feature heavily in it and are a big part of the reason why it's so successful. The MTG Super 2016 Super Sunday Series Championship took place this past weekend in Renton, Washington at Wizards headquarters. This was the tournament for people who've won Super Sunday Series at GPs throughout the past year. Sam Black won with the help of 4 Color Rally in Standard. Again, Rally was the most popular deck in the Standard portion of the event. People were really surprised that Wizards didn't really have a lot of coverage for this. There was some text coverage, there were some clips, but people were surprised because Reed Duke was there, Neil Oliver was there, Florian Koch was there, Sam Black was there. This is something that people assume there would just be more support for, which led to our friend Ruben Bressler and his friend AJ Soccer deciding at the last minute that they were just going to fly to Wizards and just cover the damn thing.
Why the fuck not?
Why the fuck not? There was a store in Pennsylvania called Tales of Adventure, which I've been to before, and the owner saw this on Twitter and paid for their plane tickets.
Wow.
So the owner saw that Ruben and AJ wanted to do this, said, "Was you know what? I'll sponsor this. Here you go. Here are your plane tickets." And so they flew to Wizards. They detailed their adventure in tweets and videos. And ultimately, when they got there, Wizards kind of put the kibosh on the whole thing. For whatever reason, they just said that they couldn't do it. And so they did make these little clips, but it wasn't nearly like what they wanted to do. And people were surprised. Like, you know, what did you guys think about this, that Wizards was not supporting this event and also kind of preventing other people from doing so?
I think it's unfortunate because, I mean, I understand that, you know, they have their own coverage and they like to do that and probably they like to do things their way. But if I was a company, I would be floored and amazed that people cared about something that much that they wanted to just come out and cover it. You know, I would want to be supportive of that. I would want to be like, you're part of the Magic community, you do all these other things, and you want to do coverage for this event, and that's really awesome. So I guess I'm just surprised that they would, you know, miss out on a good opportunity, because that would also, you know, create good press for them as well to be like, yeah, hey, come on, you know, we want you here. We want you to be part of this.
There were people that didn't even know the event was happening until the Ruben and AJ thing got going.
Mm-hmm. Yep. I was one of those people. Yep. I didn't know.
Yeah. And to me, I think that says something about you when outsiders are giving your event more press than your own people are. That seems like a really big ball was dropped there.
Yeah. I'm not sure about all the, like, legal things, like any documents that they have to get signed by everybody at the beginning or, you know, anything that goes on behind the scenes. But I will say that it was really nice to see the Magic community, like, pull together rather than, you know, fight. Because we, in the last year, have just seen a lot of, like, huge arguments and things on Twitter, and it was really nice to see people that were like, yeah, I want to support you, and it seemed like a very band together kind of thing, and it was really nice to see that. I mean, I know some people had some more negative views on it, but I really enjoyed seeing the community just work as a team for once.
Yeah, I agree with Katie. I think it was really heartwarming to see, you know, all the people who offered Ruben and AJ help for this, all the people who donated, you know, offered to drive them around Seattle, lend them equipment, get them where they needed to be. I think that was really great to see, you know, all the success that came out of that crowdfunding mission. But on the other hand, you know, I completely understand why Wizards would make the decision that, you know, they didn't want them to do coverage. You know, I obviously don't know all the ins and outs of this, but I imagine, you know, from a legal standpoint, there are liabilities. You know, as Katie said, you know, they didn't have, like, you know, waivers or proper documentation for people. So I understand, you know, as a business, you have to make a sound business decision, and I understand that. But I mean, I can also kind of see, you know, I saw Kai Buddha was talking on Twitter about how, you know, it kind of makes their coverage look incompetent if, you know, people who are not on their coverage team have to sort of come in and do something for them. You know, I think it does send a bad message, even though Ruben and AJ had the best of intentions and the community did want to see this event. I think it's definitely a tough situation. And I'm not sure, like, on which side of the line I fall. I could definitely see both sides of it, but I'm not sure. I think I can respect the decision that Wizards made.
Mm-hmm. It was strange to me because I remember when I participated in the Community Cup and, you know, we were encouraged to use the hashtag and tell people what was going on. And, you know, there was such a stark contrast between that and the Super Series. Like, even the pros themselves, I didn't know Reed Duke was there. I didn't know that Sam Black was there. And maybe I wasn't following them closely enough. But I think there were maybe two or three people there that were, like, live tweeting the event. And I just didn't see the support for it, even from the players themselves, where it was like, you know, don't you want people to know that you're here? Like, you know, when we were at the Community Cup, everything we did, you know, we had Allison with us, we had Nate with us, and they were sort of whispering in our ear, tell people you're having a good time. Tell people what you just said. That was really, really funny. And it just didn't seem like they had the support there that was encouraging these people to do that. And like I said, that just felt like a really big mistake because this was a really golden opportunity to, you have all these players from across the world coming together, being friends, and, you know, all these stories. Like, one guy was a teacher, and he talked about how he raps and, like, taught his students how to play Magic. And, you know, this could have been a really good opportunity to promote your brand and promote a different side of Magic. And they didn't do that. And this was a really big letdown for me. There was a Tumblr post that went around the last couple of days written by a young lady named Kara, and it's called The Girlfriend Zone, Misogyny, and Magic. Some of the highlights from the post, I'm going to go ahead and read them. I made a terrible mistake. Dating people in one community is like dating people you work with. I didn't intend for my experiences to be the result. I desperately wanted friendships, but nobody wanted to be close to me unless I would sleep with them or date them. Nobody wanted Kara. They wanted female magic player, and she wrote that in capital letters. Another highlight was, this isn't about mistreating women because they're different from men, but because they are the same. We make the same mistakes, but are criticized more harshly due to a hive mindset. The only difference is that a woman can look at her opponent and think opponent, but he will look at her and see female. What did you guys think about this post?
I thought this post was really relevant. I've had this kind of same thing happen where when I was dating Brooke, when I first started to play Magic, I was pretty accepted by the community. I didn't feel like I was always respected as much as he was because I wasn't as good as him, but, you know, I always kind of still fit in. And then when we broke up, I got asked on a few dates by, a few different players, and I respectfully declined all of them, but I was like, I would still like to be friends and stuff. And it created a really big divide in the community almost that, you know, people that were friends with those people were still their friend, but didn't want to be my friend. And it really felt like for a while, like if I didn't want to date somebody, I wasn't going to be accepted. And I don't think that a lot of people like fully understand the implications of that, because when you go to a tournament and you just want to be there to play Magic, and there's all this other like drama surrounding everything that's going on in your real world, it makes it really hard as a female if you're not accepted because you said no to a date with somebody, and then that goes around the whole Magic community as a rumor, and it just creates really big divides. I had never really put all of this into words, but I think that her article did a good job like hitting the nail on the head with a big problem in our community with dating and relationships and still trying to fit into Magic if those relationships don't work out. So I really enjoyed this post by Kara.
Yeah, it definitely made me feel a lot of feels, and not necessarily like my personal feels, but just trying to wrap my head around, you know, that type of situation. Like, I can speak to that. I know some people in real life that this would possibly apply to. And I just think it's sad that, you know, just because, you know, you would happen to date someone that happened to be a fellow Magic player, that, you know, afterwards there's this horrible aftermath of, like, the whole shame and skepticism that she talks about and rumors being spread about you. And, you know, so what if you date a couple different players at your store? I mean, that's completely your prerogative. You know, I don't see why there has to be a bunch of drama associated with it, or why it's okay for, you know, a guy to do it. But if a girl does, it's like, ooh, look at her. She's like, you know, the LGS like ho or something. And it's like, well, no, she just moved on to a different relationship. You know, it's no different than, you know, what you're doing. Why are you making such a big deal out of it? And I also think it's sad that you can't just be friends with people sometimes, that they do want something more. And if you tell them that you're not interested, then they're just completely turned off by you instantly. And it's like, but you liked me up until I told you I had a boyfriend, or you liked me up until I said I wouldn't go on a date with you. So what changed? Just because, you know, so you didn't really like me, you just liked the prospect of, you know, having someone that had some similar interests with that you had a thing for, and then decided that just because I wouldn't sleep with you or go on a date with you or something, that automatically I'm not good anymore. And it's kind of shitty. But I also can kind of respect, you know, someone's decision to be like, yeah, I'm looking for a relationship. I know what I want. I don't want any more friends. But on the flip side, the person that probably did want a friend like me or someone else would be like, well, but I wanted a friend. I guess we both can't have what we wanted, unfortunately.
Yeah, this isn't a situation that I've necessarily been in, so I don't know that I can speak to it necessarily. But, you know, I completely agree with what Katie and Chris have said. I mean, your relationships are your own personal business, and they shouldn't have any bearing on, you know, how you're treated when you go to your game store and play Magic. I mean, just about anything outside the game shouldn't have any bearing on it. So I don't know. This definitely spoke to me in the sense that, you know, I've also experienced just a lot of microaggressions while playing Magic, just based on my gender. I've written my own Tumblr post called Magic and Microaggressions like a year and a half ago. And it's funny that, you know, I've been talking about all these things that have happened for a while now, and yet they still keep happening, and more women keep writing Tumblr posts about, you know, things that have happened at their local game stores. And, you know, this is shaping up to be a very positive year for women in Magic. And I'm hoping that some of that will trickle down to the local level, because I feel like that's where we're still seeing these really fraught situations.
Yeah, I related to this post for a number of reasons. The one thing that I want to stress, though, is not only should people should read the post, because it was a really good post, but scroll down to the notes. I'm not really fluent in Tumblr, so I freely admit that. But so there are 700 notes on this post, and I want people to count how many comments were left, or I guess when you share or reblog, you can choose to leave a comment, yeah, or, you know, whatever. How many of these reblogs were along the lines of "Me too," "I've been through this," even if you don't want to listen to what Kara's saying, and you should, because if you don't, you're a jerk. But people like to say things like, "This don't happen." And I want people to see the number. This isn't just, these aren't isolated incidents. This is a trend. This is something that is happening in the local game store setting. And I could see if one person was saying it that you might be tempted to be like, "Nah, we don't know the whole story," or whatever excuse you're going to use. But when you look at this, 1, 2, 3, 4, I mean, you look at this, you can't deny that this is happening. And I really want people to look at that when they try to dismiss a post like this. Like, you're not just dismissing this one person. There are all these people that have the same story. They don't know each other. They have no reason to lie. They have no reason to collude. What do you have to say to that, you know?
Yeah, I didn't read the comments because I try not to read the comments, but I'm reading them now, actually. And it's surprising how many people say, have left comments saying, "This is why I don't play Magic more often." And that is so sad to me.
Yeah, and I just wish that people would, instead of trying to, you know, invalidate someone's experience, look at the total sum of the experiences and be like, okay, so is she making it up too? Are they making it up? Is this, you can't, at some point you can't deny that it's happening. I related to this post specifically as somebody who, I'm flirty. I like to have a good time. I'm a very sexual person. And I experienced this a lot when I played World of Warcraft. Like, there were people that assumed because I was flirty that I was going to be flirty with them. And they would be like, "Oh, well, you work in a porn store. You like to have a good time." Yeah, but that doesn't mean I want to have a good time with you. And then, like you said, when you would say that you're not interested, suddenly it was, "Well, you led me on," or, "Oh, now you have standards. Now you're choosing." No, I've always had standards. Like, you know, people assume that if you are an open person, that means you're going to be open with everybody. And so I would get a lot of people that were shitty to me when I told them I wasn't interested in them, because they assumed that I would be because of my personality. And it made me cautious when I was dealing with people that were nice to me. I remember when I moved back from Reno, Nevada, I had just gotten over a breakup and I had not a lot of money. Like, I moved back here with not very much. I didn't even have a computer, because the computer I was using to raid was my boyfriend's computer, my boyfriend at the time. And I remember my friend Brian bought me a computer. Like, I moved back home and all of a sudden there was a box at my door and there's a computer. And I saw that it was from him. And I remember calling him and going, "I don't have to sleep with you, right?" And he's like, "No." And I'm like, "And you don't want phone sex, right?" "No." "Cyber sex?" Like, I'm going over all of the things because that's what I was used to. I was used to things being given to me with a catch or with some sort of string attached. And he's just like, "Aaron, I just want you to raid. Like, we're on the same raid group. You're my friend. You're going through a really shitty breakup. You're going home with not a lot of your possessions. You're having to start over. I just had this computer laying around. It was a refurb. Take the computer." And then I really felt like a jerk afterwards, but that's what I had been used to. That was my experience. And it really took me a long time to sort of let those walls down of not everybody's trying to fuck me, to screw me over. Some people are just genuinely trying to be nice to me and they don't want anything from me. And I really didn't like that. That was my experience for a really long time, that I was so guarded. And that anytime someone was nice to me, I just assumed they wanted something.
Yeah, that really resonates with me too. Like, I think a lot of the reason that I don't like to talk to many people at large tournaments, whether it's PPTQs or GPs or whatever, I don't talk to my opponent because I feel like every time I'm just genuinely having a nice conversation, at the end of it, it's always like, well, do you want to go on a date or do you want to give me your phone number or like something like that? And I'm like, why can't I just have a nice conversation without it leading anywhere? Like, why can't it just be enjoyable? And it seems like, especially in Magic, that that just doesn't happen a lot. So I find myself not being as friendly as, you know, I usually am in the real world, or, you know, like I just hold back a lot because I'm like, well, I don't want them to think anything more of this because that's not what I'm looking for here. I just want to play Magic. So a lot of times in tournaments that dictates my behavior a lot more than, you know, I'm not always a bitch. So I mean, I am sometimes, but a lot of the times I just don't feel like I can have just an enjoyable time because at the end it always seems like it ends up awkward or, you know, it's just, it's rare to just have a good time. So I just am very guarded at tournaments, I feel like.
Well, then that leads to the double standard too of like, you know, so you kind of can't win for losing, where it's like, so if you go into the situation, you know, just wanting to make friends, you know, then you get some people that are just trying to date you, then you turn them down. Well, then you're seen as leading people on. Then if the opposite happens, if you do happen to have a little bit of a wallop, then you're frosty, then you're rigid, then you need to loosen up a little, you need to smile, you know. There are a lot of times where it's like, what am I supposed to do? Like, you know, like if I'm too friendly with you, then you think I'm skanky or I'm too eager. But if I'm a little guarded or I make you work for my friendship, well, then I'm unapproachable, I'm distant. And it's just like, you know, you do sometimes feel like you're doomed either way. Mm-hmm. And I've certainly gotten it from both sides. So, oh, she's aloof, she, you know, whatever. And it's just like, how, you know, guys don't have to deal with this, you
know? And I've just chosen frosty over friendly, like it's just bottom line,
frosty over friendly. Oh, man, now I'm going to think of Frosty. I'm going to cry. Good going, Katie.
I didn't know what kind of nose he had, so it's okay.
It's fine. It's fine. I was surprised how many listeners had reached out to me after the episode and were like, I cried too, girl. It's okay. So, I have a little support group if I ever decide that I want to watch Frosty again. Listener question this week. Be sure to send your questions to thegirlfriendbracket@gmail.com. This question comes to us from Alex from Denver, Colorado. And Alex writes, I have been a kitchen table Magic player since Lorwyn Block, and in the last 12 months, I've been getting more into Magic and specifically Modern. I have a very basic Jeskai Ascendancy deck, which I love playing, but I am rapidly growing to the ends of my shoestring mana base. I traded most of my extra stuff from my collection to get the basic mana base and cantrips, and signing up for weekly tournaments is hard enough after having to scrape up money for therapy and hormone replacements. So I'm guessing Alex is trans. Yay! I do like to play Magic, but also want to save up money on the side and also save up for surgeries. I will not quit Magic, but how would you advise somebody trying to strike a balance of having fun while being economically feasible?
Oh, this is a tough question. I mean, we all definitely have things in our life that we want to, you know, save money for other than Magic. In my case, I mean, Robert and I are looking to buy a house sometime in the next year or two. So that's always something on my mind. And that's, you know, even something that we've been talking about recently, because I want to travel to more GPs, but we also want to save to buy a house. So how do you balance those things? And I guess the two pieces of advice that I have here are, you know, first of all, making a list of your priorities is a really good thing, just so you have a way to, you know, visualize that and keep yourself accountable. Just be very certain and honest with yourself about, you know, what you want to prioritize, how you know, what's most important to you, and allocate for what's most important to you. And I guess the other thing would be, don't be afraid to say no to someone or to any kind of like a certain opportunity if it means that it's at the expense of what's most important to you. If you want to save up for, you know, having a surgery or for any kind of personal thing that is important to you, that's your top priority. And if, you know, it means giving up the chance to going to a GP or going to a tournament, there will always be more tournaments. There will always be more GPs. I mean, I had to, you know, there was one time that I really wanted to go to a GP because it was really close by. And I didn't go because I had to move that weekend. And it was, you know, there were a lot of costs involved with moving. It was a huge ordeal. And, you know, for a long time, I was just like, well, there's no reason why I shouldn't go to this GP. I just had it so ingrained in me that if there's a GP within 3 hours of where I live, I have to go. And there's no reason why I shouldn't go. And letting go of that idea was so freeing to me because it allowed me to just, you know, pursue other things that were important to me. And, you know, magic is a means of escape from, you know, whatever else is going on in your life. It should be something freeing. It shouldn't be something holding you back from doing other things that are important to you.
Yeah. For me, it took me a long time. So I started with not very many cards, and then I was trying to get into standard and modern, and I was just like, where do people get all these cards from? And I'd trade for something, and I'd put a bunch of, like, crap rares or whatever into it, and I'd have this one card, and then I'd be like, okay, well, I'm out of cards, so can't play one card decks. And so it took me a really long time to figure out that when I had very little amounts of cards, that actually the best way to get cards was, say, you trade for some Serum Visions or something, and you're running low on cards, and people want Serum Visions, I would always say, no, those are for my deck, you can't trade for those, or whatever. But actually, since those are the things that people want, I started trading away pieces of my deck to get two pieces for the deck that aren't that card, or just trying to get good value on what little you have. And so I think that, you know, don't try and cling a lot to your mana base or whatever. Trade a Scalding Tarn away if it means you get more cards for the deck or some cards that other people will trade for where you can trade back to your Scalding Tarn. And just doing those micro trades with a little value added on top will get you a bigger collection quite quickly.
Good advice. I should take that.
Chris is like, what was that again? I'm going to write this down.
Yeah, because I was thinking about it because I end up in these situations where it's like, I probably shouldn't have bought these magic cards, but then I did, so there's no going back. But when I try to be an adult about my purchases, I'll be like, okay, we've paid all of our bills. That part is done. What is left over? What do I want to get? Do I want to save up for XYZ deck? What cards do I need for it? How much are they? Is there something that I can use in place of insert card here until I can get these other cards? And then I kind of am like, okay, well, I'm going to put aside X amount of money, you know, every time I get paid to save up to get this deck. And, you know, it might take me some more time, but I'll get there. It's not like it's going anywhere, especially like with a format like Modern, no big deal. I mean, you're fine unless you're, you know, deck unfortunately got banned, you're okay. So you know,
that was low.
I know, my bad. But yeah, so I, you know, I think it's just a matter of, you know, setting aside, you know, time, even like Hallie said, to be like, what are your priorities? Like, what do you want to do? If you're going to say, well, my goal is to get to, you know, try to get these, you know, hormone treatments, great. How much does it cost? How much do you need? And kind of like separate it out. And if magic has to take a back seat so that you can feel better about yourself as a person, then I definitely think that takes the priority over magic.
The couple things I would like to add to this is make sure that you're getting the most value out of your cards as you can. One of the things that I used to do is I used to make the mistake of trading with my local game store. And I don't want to seem like I'm shitting on local game stores, but a lot of times when you trade with them, you're only getting like half the value of the card and maybe like a 20% bonus if you get store credit, but you're still not getting the full value for a card. And so I've got to the point now where if I'm going to do any trading, I either trade directly with people or I go through Puka Trade. Because if I'm going to give you a Lion's Eye Diamond, I want every cent of that $80 to go towards other cards. So I really enjoy Puka Trade, especially if you know that you have an event coming up, like say that you don't need the cards right away, you know, go on Puka and get every drop of store credit or every drop of credit that you can. Using, you know, one of the things that I like to do as well is use like budget options if I know I'm just going to F&M. So if you know you're going to something that's like more of a casual event, use a Shockland. use a pain land, if you will, until you have the fetch lands, and then save up that money for that big event that's coming so that when the GP does come or whatever it is you're trying to go to, you have that really expensive card that you've been saving up for. But, you know, if you're sweating that you don't have the expensive cards for F&M, it's just F&M. Like, you can kind of get away with it there. And so, you know, I really wouldn't worry about it if those are the kinds of events that you want to make sure you have these cards for. I would also recommend services like SpareDeck.com. SpareDeck is the rental service that we've talked about where you can rent cards and you can rent a deck. Again, same thing. You know, you can spend your time testing at F&M using like your budget cards or using services like Xmage, which are completely free. And then put that money away, rent that deck, get those Puka cards, you know, until you actually need them. You can spend that time saving up the money while you're playing these free or cheaper games of Magic, if that makes any sense. So if anybody's enjoyed listening to the show, how can they find you all and how can they get a hold of you?
So I'm Hallie. You can find me on Twitter at HalCanSan. That's HalCanSan. You can watch me on twitch.tv/HalCanSan. I will be streaming this week. I will probably have streamed by the time this episode comes out. And I'll be heading to GP Vancouver this weekend. But once I come back, I will have a pretty clean slate for the month of February, and I'll have a more regular schedule in place. And I'll be streaming about 2 or 3 times a week. So stay tuned for that. And as always, you can find my writing here on Gathering Magic.
And I'm Katie. You can find me on Twitter at MeanMugger. That's MeanMugger. Or you can find me by email, katie.neil14@gmail.com.
And I'm Chris. You can find me on Twitter at Chris, at TEHKRIZ. My Gmail is YOTEHKRIZ@gmail.com. And my Snapchat is Cryptic Command, spelled with K's.
And I'm Erin. You can find me on Twitter at Original Estrus. That is OriginalOestrus. You can email me personally at estrus@elitistrix.com. The show is on Twitter at the GF Bracket. We are on Patreon at patreon.com/thegirlfriendbracket. And you can email us at thegirlfriendbracket@gmail.com. Thank you all so much for listening, and we will talk to you next week. Bye-bye.